Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, we are speaking to Miles Montes, Chief Product Officer at DocSpace. I believe this is the first time it's being announced, right, Miles?
Yeah, that's true.
Awesome. Good to have you on. So, you know, you're actually the first product person that we have on the podcast. Typically, we're talking to marketing insights professionals, but I felt like this was a good time to have you on the podcast because so much of what we do in the research world and the marketing world, really it's around driving insights for either developing new products, marketing new products. And product, I feel like, is reaching this peak interest in tech, right? Like people are talking about it. People are more interested in this as a career. And yet I have found, and I suffer from it myself, like not knowing what product is in general. I know we could dedicate a whole podcast, multiple series on product, but for our audience, for people that maybe tangentially know what product is, like, can you distill it down as to what a product person does?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, even when I first got into the field or the in this career, like those were all questions that I had too. And I think still to this day, I get those questions, you know, when I, you know, I'm just out and about talking about what I do. But yeah, in short, you know, product management is a role within product and development that leads the strategy of a product and the tactical execution to fulfill that strategy. Right. So I guess in other words, what that means is that, product leaders, we don't manage, you know, people, we manage a product, and we have to lead with influence, and we're equally responsible for the success of that product. And you know, when I say equally, what that means is we intimately partner with engineering and design, but we also, at the same time, you know, partner with marketing, finance, operations, and now I add community into that because that's also somewhat of a hot topic as of late as well.
That's super interesting. I've never heard it kind of positioned as a product first, where you're managing the product. I mean, but I like it because I think it puts a North Star, right? I don't know. Can you dive into that a little bit more? Like what that means to put the product first and everything coming outside from that?
Yeah, you know, I it's definitely a newer approach. You know, like. At my time at ADP, you know, I used to work in product there, building platform. That company's been around for 70 years. You know, most of that, when you think of companies during, you know, the 90s and further than that, most of them were service-led companies, right? Meaning that you built your product and you have this large service organization that really supports that product. But what it means to be more of a product-led company is that you're really delivering solutions directly to your customers without really thinking about how, and I guess maybe the better framing would be with intentionally thinking about how your customers are going to use this product and how the rest of your organization can support that customer during that journey, right? So like ADP is a great example, actually. I like using them as an example because that company has doubled the size of the organization in comparison to like to its competitor Workday, right? And so when you look at how Workday is building their product, they're focused solely on customer experiences. And so what does that mean for a customer though, right? Like as a customer, I don't want to have to call somebody to go use your product. So when I go and look at payroll solutions, I got to go call somebody at ADP to figure out how to do my payroll. And then you look at the other solutions in the market like Gusto, you can literally be up in payroll within minutes, right? So customer expectations are much higher in 2021. There is no more, the attention span that customers have or consumers have in this market are no longer as high as we think they are. And customers will switch. They, you know, they demand excellence.
So I have a lot of questions, but I realized we jumped in and didn't even do an intro for you. so let's go back a little bit. Okay. How did you get into product? Like, how did you, I mean, tell us a little bit about your career, like where you started and now you're like chief product officer at DocSpace. Let's talk about that evolution.
Yeah, I think it goes back to me being like an 11-year-old, 12-year-old kid who's just really into gaming. And I used to love playing Halo, but I got bored of it. And so I started seeing all these other people cheat on the game. And so I'm like, you know what? I want to learn how to do that too. So I hacked my Xbox and I started changing maps and weapons. And, I started making money like off of doing that because people would offer me like free accounts, and pay me. And so I'm like, okay, well, I kind of got bored of that after a while and was like, you know what? I'd rather just lag people out of games. So I started like hacking their network and lagging them out. And slowly, and actually what's kind of cool about this is during that time, right, forums were kind of a big thing. And so on this forum, there was also a design area. And then that's how I slowly got introduced to design as well. And so I started building this skill set at an early age. And when I got into school for computer science at Cal Poly Pomona. I ended up switching my major due to some bad advice, but realized quickly, like early on in my senior year, that I wanted to get back into somewhere on the technology side. I had an uncle who worked at Disney, and he'd always talk about his job, right? And he worked in product. So I'm like, okay, like that sounds really cool. It sounds creative. It sounds fun. And you're, you know, making some pretty big decisions. And so there's no way into a product role, at least when I got in, without going to a Stanford or a Berkeley. Right.
Yeah. And so
I had to go build my own company. So I went and, started my first startup, which was called Parade Cards, where I built an MVP to bring video to greeting cards that would live on the cloud. I spent a couple years doing that when that didn't work out. And that actually helped me build my network within LA, within the tech ecosystem. I went and spent 5 years at ADP building platform, which is mostly a more technical, a technical job in nature as a product person. But even that was tough, you know, like I had to go to a conference where ADP had sponsored a product event. I went and met all the directors. I got invited to a happy hour, went and met all of the product team there. Then I got invited to a mock interview and, you know, so within 2 years of working in that the startup that I built, I was able to build some of those relationships and then ultimately make the jump. And when I made the jump, I spent, you know, 5 years there, you know, quickly rose the ranks. I, you know, worked crazy hours because we also had teams in different countries that, you know, my engineering teams were a part of. And then after the 5 years, I just realized that I am more entrepreneurial in nature, and I didn't want to work in an environment that wasn't moving fast. We weren't building products that, like, we're truly solving customer problems. We're making fragmented decisions. And so then I made the jump to join another startup called ShopLat Next. Ended up taking that company from zero to one. We launched the first marketplace platform. And once that got funded, now, you know, made the jump over to DocSpace, where I built a relationship with the founder over the last couple of years.
That's pretty amazing. I feel like you kind of represent the new school of product, and your life is really indicative of the changes happening in larger society, right? Like the interests you've had started in gaming. Something that, I mean, it's existed for a while, but like, you know, Halo is a completely different animal than the video games that were out in the 80s and 90s. So like, you know, you got interest through a video game that's immersive, and really hacked literally your own way, your own path, right? Like not going to necessarily like some of those tech funnel schools, switching from computer science to another degree, working your way into a startup. And then I think what's really interesting is you worked at the most traditional company that you can get, ADP, right? But earning your stripes there, I feel like, is so important to understand how an old school company works for you able to apply some of those learnings, because there's learnings to be had from an ADP, right? Like, they're ADP for a reason. But applying those learnings to a Shop Latinx and now DocSpace, I feel like, is so important, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of times product people, or people just in R&D in general, we're so hungry and passionate about wanting to build something. But when you haven't, if you have an opportunity to work for a company that has figured it out and has lasted as long as a company like ADP has, they're doing a lot of things right. And, you get to learn the finance side, you get to learn the operations side, you get to learn the marketing side. And then in product, right, you get to own, quite a bit, because there's so much opportunity in a bigger company. And you get to learn, playbooks, what works and what doesn't. And you can take those learnings. And when you jump into a startup, it's like, okay, great. Now that you have all these learnings and this experience and working with much bigger teams, how can you take that and shrink it down and move fast, while still executing, because you have that experience. I think a lot of times when people jump to a startup, as a first step in their career, there's a whole lot of learning that you haven't learned yet, right? And there's going to be a lot of mistakes that you'll make along the way. And I think when you have that foundation, you're de-risking, what you're working on even further. And that's the whole concept of being in a startup, is de-risking so you can grow the company and make it a real thing.
And I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like your career is kind of dovetailed with the timeline of this shift in, service centricity versus product centricity. Like, is that true? And why, what kind of external factors have shifted from companies being, services first and then product second to product first? Like, what's at play there? Is it the internet? Is it consumer demand? Is it both? Like, I'm just curious why this shift is happening, because I see it happen. I'm going to see the importance of it, and looking at that, I'm just kind of thinking bigger, like, why and when did this shift happen?
Yeah, I think, platform product development hasn't been around for a long time. I'd say within the last 10 years, it's now taking off. And I think people call it many different things now. When I was at ADP, we looked up to companies like Shopify and Salesforce and Amazon, right? When you think of like Amazon's story, right? Like, AWS only existed because of how they built their technology internally. And then ultimately used that because they knew that other companies would need the same type of solutions. And so, even research around it is small, but I think you're right. I think building platforms are more attractive. And the reason being is because it solves for many things. Like, when you think of Shopify as an example, right? When you're no longer building for yourself and you're building one to many, right? Like, when I think of building, like, Shopify as an example, you can go on, create your, like, I guess maybe even let me reframe that a bit. When Toby started the company, he was building a snowboard website, and then he realized, like, wow, why is this so dang difficult, and then he made it accessible to more people. And so the accessibility is a big thing. How can you make your product more accessible by nature, and then start thinking about everything else after that, right? In terms of, like, how can I support it? But now you just made your product, one, more attractive because you can sell it to more people or to more customers. the technology is more extendable, meaning that just like Shopify's app ecosystem, right? You allow other people to come in and help build your own product for you, which helps accelerate your platform. And so it's no longer a fragmented market. Customers don't want to have 20 different products anymore, right? They don't want to have, when you think of ADP's platform, like they have payroll, they have HR, they have benefits, they have tax garnishments. They don't want to go to 20 different companies for that anymore. They want like one solution that helps them solve it without having, they want less friction. They want it to be less expensive, and they want it to be easy to use. And the easy to use is such a big component of those three things that I mentioned.
That's so true. Yeah. No, I mean, now you got me thinking differently about it. I mean, even like Slack, right? I mean, Slack was an internal communication tool. I believe the founders were like a gaming company or video games, and they just kind of made Slack as a side product that they used to communicate internally. I realized, wow, this is kind of cool. And now it's, you know, multi-billion dollar company. Although, were they acquired? They were acquired, right? Microsoft?
I think they did sell. I don't know if it was Microsoft or Salesforce, actually.
Okay. Maybe Salesforce. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, now you got me thinking of all the platforms that are out there. And I guess thinking about like the societal pressures that are driving that. I mean, obviously the internet, none of this would be possible without that. I think also social media, which has kind of productized our identities, right? Like you go to these different platforms and, you know, it's enabled people to be a brand unto themselves. And so now as you look to build yourself as a brand, you can now sell things right on Shopify. And I think what's interesting, kind of going full circle, like DocSpace is doing that for medical professionals, right? That have like that are brands unto themselves on social media, but to be able to launch a practice is much different. There's a whole kind of slew of regulatory issues there that and hurdles. That as opposed to just launching a t-shirt brand, right? Which I think is super interesting. And I witnessed it firsthand. My wife was a therapist, right? And she launched a solo practice, and it's kind of a nightmare to your point. Like she has to use different technology solutions for every single part of that business because of HIPAA compliance.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like it's the whole process of just starting the clinical practice, right? Like whether it's the formation or the medical malpractice or the billing, the banking, right? Like all of the stuff you have to do in order to create the business in the first place, and then ultimately to manage it and then grow it. Platforms that can support those three things typically give themselves more opportunity to truly change markets and drive better customer experiences.
And what one thing that I love about kind of the product centricity, like this shift happening for me, right, in our business and our listeners, is about inclusivity. I think the more open, the easier it is for entrepreneurs, for healthcare professionals, whatever it may be, to open up a business. I feel like this shift is also just more naturally inclusive, right? Because opening up access is just allows you to have more patience, more point of views, better branding from a cultural perspective. And products, as we know, have a huge impact on our everyday lives. I don't know. What are your thoughts around? I mean, you were at a brand that, you know, Shop Latinx, that was tapping into a huge market. And it's kind of crazy there aren't more brands doing that, right? Aimed at Latinx business owners and many times Latinx customers. I mean, what is this shift leading to more inclusivity, or and what can we do to make products more inclusive?
Yes, I would say it's definitely, you know, leading that shift. You think about, like, I see it so clearly, because when I was at ADP, you know, we didn't really have a brand. You know, we had a legacy brand that has persisted over time. And I think, you know, actually right before I left, we had launched like this new marketing effort, and it was on radio and all of these legacy like marketing channels. I remember sending an email to the CMO at the time saying, like, you know, who are we trying to attract? You know, like, like, what is the brand image for ADP now? Like, it didn't feel like anything changed, you know, like our image was just boring and dry, and like, you couldn't really connect with it. But we had been putting a lot of money into R&D. And so I noticed that, you know, we're trying to shift to become a tech company. And then when I joined SLX, I realized, wow, like, that was, you know, SLX has an amazing brand. When you go on the Instagram, you see inclusivity right off the bat. You see the way that they speak to customers, and you see the team that's also behind the scenes building for those customers, right? And that's important. Product is often inflated, you know, in terms of like how important we are to an organization, but really branding is much more important, or as equally as important. I won't create a hierarchy here, but it's equally as important, because really, like, that's what your customers think when they think of Shop Latinx, right? They want to know that, like, oh, like right off the bat, the name, you can hear it. Yeah, the customers that are represented in the marketing is all there. The brand voice is there, right? Like the way you speak to your customers. And then ultimately in the product itself. So when you go on like shoplatinx.com, right, you're seeing a bunch of black and brown brands that are looking to focus their products around specific consumers. But ultimately, I think what this drives to is that the root of the question is, why haven't brands been more inclusive from the beginning? You know, it's better for business. You're going to, at its core, you are going to generate more revenue. You are going to build a stronger brand from it. And when you think of brands that are doing that, like, you can look at like Glossier as an example, right? They've been inclusive in nature. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, right, there were a bunch of e-commerce brands being called out for lack of representation. And there are a lot of leaders that were displaced because of it. It's just not smart for business.
I like that you're bringing it back to business, because, I mean, that's what this podcast is about, right? Like, we talk about multicultural consumers, but ultimately, America's changing. I mean, I just did a presentation for one of the largest retail pharmaceutical brands, and they wanted me to speak on kind of the changing demographics. And I was going to focus on multicultural because that's what we do, but I was digging into some numbers and I found this interesting trend happening. So one, these are things probably all listeners know, right? Like, America is becoming more multicultural. By 2050, the non-Hispanic white population is going to be less than Black, African-American, and Asian, and mixed race. If we look at Gen Z, they're already there. Gen Z is actually the first generation in history that's majority-minority, which is weird to say because they're the majority now, but whatever. And you know, what's driving that? So what's driving that is actually US births. What's happening is that multicultural, whether Hispanic, African-American, Asian, are having, you need to have 2.1 children as a population to replace yourself, right? Ultimately, to just kind of stay stable. Non-Hispanic whites are not, they're having less children. So they're actually, I mean, they're dying at a faster rate than they're replacing themselves, which is a problem for countries, right? We're actually seeing birth rates across the globe plummeting. And that's a problem for societies, right? Because when you start to think about things like Social Security, taxes, et cetera, like you need to have babies to just make the world work, right? And so growth is literally being driven by multicultural consumers. So there's that whole trend. When we look at specifically in the US, multicultural consumers are what's keeping America from a population perspective afloat. And then there's a competing, not a competing, there's a different demographic trend happening, which is right now, it's about 16-17% of the population is 65 plus. In the next 20 or 30 years, that's going to jump to almost 25%. So 24% of the population is going to be 65 plus, which is kind of insane. So you're going to have, and the majority of those people, 65 plus, about 80% are white. So you're going to have a nation that's really like, you know, multicultural. And then we're going to have like the biggest aging population ever. So if you're going to start a business right now, it's either got to be inclusive or you got to be appealing to old people, like, and which is kind of interesting. I mean, ideally you're appealing to both. I don't know where I was going with that, but it was just an interesting kind of demographic trend that I found. Like, we have like these very two distinct consumers, that really comprise the US right now. I think what I was getting at is so, I mean, when we're talking about, and you know, I don't want to say unfortunately, but like the reality is like companies want to reach younger consumers. That's just the way it's been for whatever reason. I mean, I think there's a huge untapped market in reaching older consumers. I don't know. I think it'd be really cool to start a company to reach older consumers. But most companies, if you're starting a company, you're reaching younger consumers, right? And younger consumers are multicultural. And I think one of the points, like you mentioned how important branding is, 100%. Like, it's extremely important to be inclusive from a marketing perspective. But I think a point that you made that's even more important, and looking specifically at Shop Latinx, are the people building those products, the people behind the scenes. That's even more important because as we saw during the pandemic, lots of companies, after the Black Lives Matter movement, after the murder of George Floyd, we saw a lot of companies putting statements out. That's branding. But lots of them were called out. And to have real representation from a marketing perspective, and I think equally, if not more important from a product perspective, is having diverse people on your product and marketing teams. Because a lot of what we see as a company is non-diverse teams creating products for a diverse country. And the problem with that is that we tend to congregate with people that look and think like us, right? And so I fall victim to that. I think lots of people do. Like, you think like everything you see on Twitter is reality, when in fact less than 20% of Americans have Twitter, right? And so that's what's great about research. You can see like how do people really live, and building products that are inclusive, to me, I think has so much to do with the team that you build, having a diverse team. And that's proven, right? The more diverse team that you have, that actually leads to better revenues. And I think a lot of that is driven by you have different perspectives and input on how people are really living, as opposed to how you and your friends and family live, you know?
Definitely. You know, there's one thing that you mentioned there that like I'd love to point out even further. Is you said there are a lot of non-diverse teams building for a multicultural, market. And when you think about like the people that you hire, right? When you don't hire for diversity, or for folks that truly live those lived experiences, then you're actively making your business worse.
Yeah.
You're making a choice not to make a good decision. And it just makes all the sense to have a team that has different lived experiences that can really bring their perspectives and influence to ultimately align on a product that can actually, you know, do good in the world, or have, you know, you have less experiences around building dark patterns into products, right? And dark patterns are things that typically mislead or confuse customers into doing things that they wouldn't have wanted to do, right? And a lot of that stems from, I would like to think it doesn't come, in some cases it comes from a bad place, in other cases it comes from lack of experience.
Yeah.
And you can remove all that friction and those potential mistakes by hiring the right people.
I can say, because we talk a lot to a lot of these companies, right? I mean, most of the companies that we talk to don't have diverse teams. And when they come to us, they want to like research, okay, how can we make our products more inclusive, right? And I can say like 99% of the teams have good intentions. You know, they're not out there trying to make products that are culturally insensitive or make people do things they don't want to do. It's just you don't know what you don't know, you know? Yeah. And that's why diversity in teams are so important. And then we're starting to see that. And I wanted to point something out too. Like, I think your story is a real good example of being open to people from different backgrounds, right? Because you mentioned like you came from a school that doesn't traditionally, you don't think about product and tech roles. I think that's one layer that we have to remove, right? This idea that we can only get people in tech or whatever it may be, non-tech roles and product from certain schools, you're instantly making your team and company not inclusive, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what you're doing, you know? And a lot of times, like, I think like the, if you were to ask me, you know, like, or even your customers, right, that come for research, like, what can we do to, you know, be better at serving this market? Well, first, it starts with your team, you know, before it starts with like, can you do more research? Because you can have that non-diverse team focused on a specific, let's say like a Latinx consumer. They could do all the research in the world, but they're never going to have that lived experience that they can really deeply empathize with that type of consumer. You can sympathize and you can learn as much as you can, but at the end of the day, why wouldn't you want to have somebody that can have the entire package that can actually understand that consumer on a deeper level? And a lot of times it is, you know, there's that, I guess, that long drawn theme of like, well, where's the, you know, there isn't a pipeline for these types of product folks or engineering folks. And the reality is that you're just not doing enough to find them. You know, like we at SLX, we actively sought out different types of candidates and went to different websites, different networking events, figured out where we could find these candidates, and we found them. You know, if based on your research, right, if we're truly going to be a majority population by 2050, I think that's what you stated, then yeah, there's no way that you can say that the talent isn't out there.
I think that's a really good advice to companies listening and having problems finding diverse talent is you got to step out of your comfort zone in terms of where you're hiring, right? Like you can't, you know, if you're hiring on Indeed.com and you say, okay, we're going to try to be more inclusive and go to Monster.com, like that's not inclusivity. Like you got to actively go out there and find people. I think that's super important. And it actually reminded me of, you know, we had one of my favorite guests, we had Solomon Bennett. He heads up consumer insights at Target. And they're, for me, one of the retail brands that does inclusivity right. And I was talking to him about it, like, how are you doing it, right? Like, this is a, I mean, Target's huge. And they've kind of been on the forefront. And one of the things that he mentioned to me is that it starts with their team and not the corporate team, right? Because he's at HQ. It talks like he was talking about how it starts at the retail level. And something that made so much sense to me is, like, you know, Target realized that their consumer are the people working in the retail stores as well. So if they can make the experience for the employees at a retail level inclusive, that's where they started, right? Like a safe space and an inclusive place for their employees on the ground, transferring that to a marketing or branding perspective is easy. And I thought that was really cool. And I think that's kind of a different way to look at product first, right? They were looking at product first as the store, as the retail store where their employees are actually working, and like understanding them, like these are people that are coming from their community. And I thought that was a really cool way to flip the script on that.
Yeah, I think Target is an amazing example. Now I need to go listen to that episode, because I know that even from an e-commerce standpoint, right? Like they're also looking for brands that are more inclusive. You can walk down their aisles now and look at different brands, and they tell their brand stories on these little cards. But you're right. And even in the world of product, Target is known as a really good company to go work for.
What's another company from your perspective that's doing like inclusivity right?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm gonna plug in maybe some startups that are doing this well. Because I feel like there is this massive shift now, especially since the pandemic hit, that has accelerated, I think, a lot of these, what we would call, right, like a philosophy, but really they're facts.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's a company called Somewhere Good, and the founder's name is Naj Austin. You know, she's building a social platform that is centered around people of color. Right. And I think one of the things that you'll find, at least what I've learned through my experiences, right, when you solve for what we would call an underserved market, right, you end up solving for more than just the underserved market, because you're solving all of these use cases that typically are ignored. In addition to the problem that you're solving, and now you've just widened your market. But anyways, suffice to say, Somewhere Good, that's going to launch pretty soon. I know they're still working on that product. Shop Latinx, I think, does it well. DocSpace is another one. And then when I think of, you know, bigger companies that I think are that are starting to do that well, or have historically done that well, Target is on that list for sure. And I think you'll find that, I think many of these companies can do better, right? Cause even when you go into Target, they're, some of these products are found in specific aisles instead of just naturally being where they should be.
Yeah.
That's one. I think, there's a company called, Tala, I might be saying it wrong, but, you know, they're solving, fintech, they're building fintech solutions for the underbanked, right? And so they just inked a deal with Visa to help bring digital currency to a big population outside of the U.S. that hasn't had that opportunity. So I think those four. And I think if you want to get into the minute details of like solving for this, right, you have like ADA compliance, you have web access content or web content accessibility. So even, you know, making your website inclusive by allowing folks with disabilities to be on your website, right? Like how many times, like, and how easy is that to do, right? I mean, and maybe it's not as easy, but what you're doing is you're actively excluding some customers from buying your product. But yeah, I think those are some good companies and some ways to look at, you know, building for a more inclusive customer.
Yeah, I really like your point about Somewhere Good, about how when you solve for the underserved, you solve for a bigger market. And I mean, that's a big philosophy of ours. And I think about it a little bit differently. I think about specificity. Like, I feel like this idea from a marketing perspective, like a message for all, right? Like trying to find that message that appeals to everyone is BS. Like, it doesn't exist. To me, I'm about trying to find that consumer and be as specific as possible. Because when you do that and you do your research and find what that insight is, that's going to resonate with a very specific consumer set. Something about that appeals to more people. And I think it's the authenticity. And what I liken it to is like, it's like streaming shows, right? Like Netflix. I get into these shows that are like so specific. Like, I don't know. Have you seen Grab a Cash on Netflix?
I haven't.
Okay. So it's a very specific show, takes place in Sweden. It's a female lead running a startup. She's of color. She was like justice involved, but she, you know, leading this startup that's an IPO, but it's a very, very, very specific story, right? Someone who I really have not much in common besides the startup thing. And there's a lot of stories out there like that are just like very specific and really not, I don't really know, like connections to me in my life, but something about that specific storytelling. And I think streaming has shown us that resonates with so many people, right? Like, look at the Selena series, right? So many, like, it was the number one show. And this is a very specific story. So, I don't know. I feel like there's something in that where, like, you know, reaching very specific consumers, solving for very specific problems, has the opposite reaction that it appeals to more people because you're being more real.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, I think what I said earlier, and tying it into what you're saying now, when you build a platform and it solves for everyone, it solves for no one, right? At least yep. From a standpoint. And so even just thinking about it from a business standpoint, you can build a platform and ultimately the goal is to get it to everyone, right? Whether it solves for this type of consumer or another type of consumer. But when you focus your branding and your messaging around one, you start to build a more authentic connection, like you said, to that customer. And then ultimately, when your company is ready to start expanding to different consumer markets, then you can start to do that, but with authenticity at its core. And that's what really drives like a community of customers to love your product and your brand. Whereas, you know, you have big companies that want to target everyone, and then you look at their email, right? Even just the email marketing that you see, it's just like, oh God, I'm not going to open that. it's dry every time and I don't connect to it at all. But when you start opening up small business type emails where you have legitimate like founders or, you know, one person removed from that, those messages are very direct and people can connect to them. And it's also less like, what's the word? Like less corporate-y, right? You don't have, like, I think a lot of times in bigger companies, we get bogged down by like it's almost like you're fighting not to be authentic because you're nervous about what people are going to think. But really, like, that's the whole part of like learning, right? Like if you have the right team, you learn over time and you figure out what works and what people resonate with. And that positioning around focusing on a specific consumer can be super helpful.
Yeah. And I'm going to do a shameless plug, which I don't do often, but I feel like I have to talk about what we did at Think Now. Like there's been so many times, like, cause we've been around for 10 years. Obviously everything that's happening from a cultural perspective has been helpful to our business. I felt guilty for it for a little bit. Like, man, like, are we profiting off of everything that's happening? But then I realized we haven't changed our messaging at all. And we're completely authentic to ourselves. And it's hindered our growth at times. Cause there's times where like, we're like, do we just, you know, become a market research company, right? And not specific to multicultural consumers, and just position ourselves like that. And there's been lots of times throughout the years where that's been attractive, but we stuck to our belief, our mission, and kind of what we predicted when we started in 2010 has come true, where people are starting to realize like, oh man, like the society is really changing, you know? And if we would have changed, I think in 2015, we thought about it. If we would have changed in that time, we probably wouldn't be in business, you know?
Yeah, no, it is hard, you know, because your natural instinct is to want to serve everyone. And just even, you know, building SLX over the last year, it's like every time we had a conversation about strategy, we just became more narrowly focused as we evolved. Whereas a lot of companies want to have messaging for everyone, and it can be painful because the growth might be a little slower, in terms of like time to value, but you're slowly building relationships with your customers, right? And those relationships are what will drive the growth of your company over the long term. Without them, you're just, right, you're probably spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on paid media to try and attract customers that ultimately don't even connect with what the story of the brand is.
For sure. And I'm just looking at the time. I realize we're hitting our time here, but I want to have one last question. So we have, I think I mentioned before we started recording, kind of two different audiences, but mainly from larger Fortune 1000 companies. What's a takeaway? Like, we're talking a lot about tech and startups. I mean, what can larger companies do to be more product centric? Like, is it too difficult for them, or is it something that they can do? And what are some steps that they can take to start moving in the more product-centric direction?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one, it starts with the people on your team, and specifically the leadership team. You know, do you have a leadership team that represents the customer? Is your leadership team comprised of diverse leaders? Does your leadership provide a sphere of trust with the teams that they lead? Are your product and development teams actively talking to customers on a consistent cadence? You know, I mean, you know, I always make it a goal to talk to a customer at least one customer per week. That's not reality for everyone, but at least there should be a cadence, right? Create that, whether it's biweekly, whether it's monthly. That way you're never disconnected from that customer. Are your teams empowered to make decisions? Or are you pushing your product teams to be more project management teams, right? And in those cases, that means you're really driving decisions at the top. And most of the time, the folks at the top are mostly disconnected from the customer in a much bigger way. And so you need to empower your teams. And then also, how do you view changing markets and shifts in your own consumer markets? There's a good quote that I love that I forget who it comes from, but my engineering leader at ADP used to say it all the time. You know, you should be tightly aligned and loosely coupled. And really what that means is, you know, have that alignment with your team, but hold loosely coupled opinions, right? Or assumptions, validate them, go and experiment more. I think bigger companies lose that edge when they don't experiment. Go have somebody test out a new product, build something. I think one of the biggest things that now exists in the market that startups are taking advantage of that I think Fortune 100 companies probably haven't is looking at all the no-code tools that exist in the space now. Mm. Come up with an MVP literally within a day or a week or in a certain time frame to go and test out new ideas. I mean, I think at the end of the day, summarize, you got to have the right people on your team, and you have to have that level of introspection to be honest with yourself as a leader, fully knowing that you know that either you represent the customer or your team, and if you don't, whether your team does or not. And having that sense of trust in the teams that you you employ, whether it's on the marketing side or on the product side, those are the teams that are working directly with customers. Trust them, you know, let them make decisions. And obviously, there's a need to build a closer, better relationship between the leadership teams and the folks that are, you know, working directly with customers, and help them level up. You know, when you empower them, you kind of give them the reins to help their own careers, but to also take a step in dive into strategy more so than most, you know, front level folks are doing today, which is just tactical, right? Leverage their intelligence. They're the ones who are working directly with your customers. But I would leave it to those three things.
That's awesome. I took some notes. So thank you. That was a great conversation. If people want to connect with you online, you want to drop your handles, best way to reach you?
Yes. Best way to reach me is probably via email for this audience. So I'll plug in my personal email. So it's Miles, MILESC, as in Chris, Montez @gmail.com. And then from a social standpoint, I'm on Instagram, Twitter. I also have a TikTok, but I don't really use it. you can find me at Miles Next Door. So MILES Next, NEXTDOOR.
All right. Thanks, Miles. And thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.